Hey, do you remember Dick Tracy? Hello, and welcome to Hey, Do You Remember, a show where we reminisce about a movie or TV series we grew up with, then take off the rose-tinted glasses to see how it holds up today. I'm Vanilla Lightning.
I'm D Rockets.
And I'm Donna.
And today we're revisiting Dick Tracy.
When it's time to fight crime,
calling Dick Tracy. Calling Dick Tracy.
He's your man.
Tracy. Tracy.
Tracy.
Do you mind if I call you Dick?
Okay, boys, let's go.
Extra, extra, Tracy battles more.
Come on, Tracy, take me with you.
You're under arrest.
Warren Beatty stars in and directs this 1990 adaptation of the classic comedy strip created by Chester Gould. In the film, Big Boy Caprice strong-arms his fellow mobsters into joining forces so they can take control of the city. Tracy is the only thing standing in their way, but his problems extend way beyond Big Boy's criminal empire. He's caught in a love triangle with some pesky, misogynistic cliches, and also finds himself caring for a homeless orphan known simply as Kid. Donna, what do you remember about Dick Tracy?
Okay, Dick Tracy holds a fantastically special place in my heart as a creative, imaginative person. I remember seeing this movie and really for the first time, it blew my mind because visually the movie is so interesting. I really felt like it was probably one of the first times that my creative mind was opened in that way that you could actually transport people to a different world, that you could actually create a different, like, reality. Yeah. So that, absolutely, I was hook, line, and sinker in love with this movie as a child. It was one of the first times when I really wasn't scared of the violence and the gunfights. I wasn't scared of the really scary and amazing makeup that was done in the movie, which typically would have absolutely sent me into, like, a fit of nightmares. I remember loving Madonna. I loved her already at the time, and so watching her become this bombshell from another era, I absolutely love the movie. And the one thing that I remember really, really freaking me out about the movie was the polar bear shaped water cooler that is used. I have no explanation for why it bothered me so much, but I didn't understand what it was supposed to be. I didn't understand why they were, like, interrogating Mumbles so in such, like, a torturous manner. I found it, like, disturbing to my core. I think that was the only part of the movie that really, really bothered me as a child. And I remember asking my parents about it, and they were like, well, it was just, like, a small part. It was fine. Like, why are you worried about it? And I was like, I need answers. I don't understand what this is. So that's generally, I would say, my memory of the movie.
Okay, Carlos, what about you?
I remember the makeup on the villains. I specifically remember Flat Top. Like, he was the one that really stuck out to me. And when I was told that was, like, when I was shown William Forsythe later on in life, I was like, no, Flat Top's got, like a flat head. And they're like, you know, whoever was talking to me immediately lost respect for me. And I remember, this is kind of weird. I just remember it being like a Crayola box of colors. Like, everything was so definitively whatever color it was. Like, it wasn't just, like, kind of yellow. It was yellow. And, you know, like, the street was, like, purple. And it's like, like, it didn't quite make sense, but it was, like, the closest thing to a comic strip that I, you know, had ever seen up to that point, maybe even ever since. We'll get into what it reminded me of when I saw it later on. But, I remember, like, being immersed in this, like, city that could, you know, I could believe that people could look like these villains looked, and I could believe that these colors could be so, like, contrasted and so well lit all the time. And Yeah, and I just that's what I remember specifically, like very specifically about this movie.
I remember the summer this came out, it was just everywhere. It was the summer after Batman hit, and so the marketing campaign I remember being very similar. And this was like the next big comic book movie. I wasn't super familiar with Dick Tracy. All I knew about him was, you know, from the strip that ran in the Sunday Tribune that my mom got. And that format, that really works for setup punchline types of comics. But for serialized adventures, I didn't get much out of it. It would be like, you know, you'd have like three panels of him chasing a guy, and then in the fourth he talks into his watch and he's like, the shoe size doesn't match, see you next week.
Yeah,
nah, you won't. But I thought the movie looked really cool and I was definitely interested in it. It actually made me start paying more attention to the comic strip. I started cutting them out and waiting till I had a bunch of them, and then I'd like paste them onto notebook paper, and I'd make my own comic books out of them just so they were easier to read. I also had the novelization of the movie, but I got mine before the movie came out, which means I had the ending where the blank is not revealed to be Breathless Mahoney. That twist is left out so that it remains a surprise when you go and see the movie later. And then after the movie came out, the same novelization had a different ending where they kept the twist in.
Wow.
I didn't see it in the theater. For whatever reason, I guess I just wasn't dying to go. Like, yeah, I'll get to it when I get to it. but my mom had a friend who owned a video store. And so he got some copies in and he let her take one way before it was actually available. And so that's how I saw it for the first time. I think I liked it as a kid. I didn't love it. I know that. A large part of that, though, has to do with the fact that that 1989 Batman movie was a really seminal moment for me. It probably had more of an impact on me than any other movie from my childhood. And so at that point, I'm not sure something this bright and vibrant was all that interesting to me. I think even as an 8-year-old, a lot of this seemed very childish. And I admit that's not fair. I'm just saying that the fact is that in the wake of Batman, I was just suddenly more interested in stuff with a little bit darker of an aesthetic, some, you know, stuff that was a little edgier. Also, I remember when I would watch this, I would rarely make it to the end. I'd always shut it off and start doing something else. And in my mind, and as you guys know, when we started discussing this, I thought this movie was like 3 hours long. I just had it in my head. It was this sprawling marathon of a film. And now it's pretty easy to see why I had that impression. I think I always liked the world of the movie more than I liked the movie itself. I was really into the iconography, the costumes, the makeup, production design, all that stuff. I don't know if you remember the toys for this, but I had a few. They were made by Playmates, I think. But anyway, they were all so wide and bow-legged, and no one's wearing a coat. And without his coat, Dick Tracy is just sort of a guy in a suit. So
he's Clark Kent.
I was just going to say I would use him as Clark Kent or like an anonymous henchman or something. But anyways, the main thing I want to share is that the year this came out, I was inspired to create my own radio serial based on Dick Tracy. So I did all the voices and all the music, all the sound effects. And it's just me talking into a tape recorder. And it's pretty much the same story as the movie, only shitty. And I would steal dialogue word for word, and then there's some pretty huge deviations, which you'll see like almost immediately. But so I'm going to play a little bit of it, and because it's an audio cassette, all I can do is, you know, hold it up to the, you know, the microphone and hope that it doesn't sound too terrible. So here we go, just a little bit of 8-year-old Chris Schrader presents Dick Tracy.
Yes.
I'm so excited.
You are so awesome.
I played a little of this for Kristen earlier, and I fell on the floor. I was so embarrassed. I was so mortified. I put my head in the freezer and started banging my head on the door. I was so embarrassed by this. Okay, here we go. Here we go.
By Chris Schrader. Our story starts when Tess Trueheart and Dick Tracy are walking to the diner. I see. If you weren't risking your neck every life, every night, you could have a wife. I mean a life. There's about as much chance as me going behind a desk and me getting a new girlfriend. Now, come on. Tracy. What? You said you'd have a day off. What? Tracy. Come on. And just as Tracy was talking. Oh. Hey, kid, what's your hurry? Where are you going? Hey, stop that boy. Stop that boy. He stole my watch. Hey, kid, did you steal this man's watch? Tracy started running after the kid. Kid, stop, you're gonna get hurt. You're gonna get hurt, kid. Kid! Then a train was approaching Tracy. He picked up. Kid, watch out!
It's like you're there, I know.
It's so real.
The kid was gone. Trey decided to give up. But when he came back to the diner...
Yes?
When Tracy got to the diner, it was burning.
Yeah, way off canon now.
Dang. So it blew up.
Wait, the conversation with the owner is one of my favorite parts, isn't it? Wait, oh, it's still blowing up.
He found Al, the owner of the diner. Al, did Tess get away? Yeah, she was running home. She took off in your car. My car? That's impossible. I've got the keys. Then where'd she go? Big bleak priest.
Obviously.
Yeah.
What
am I
going to
do about my diner? What do I have to do? Raise $2,550 again? No, I'm sure there's a better way. Once I get that reward from catching Big Boy Caprice. Some of it will be for you. Tracy, how do you know you're going to get money for catching Big Boy Caprice?
Oh, this is good, too.
I got two good reasons. One... He's a complete scum. He's sloppy and he has no brain.
That's three things.
Two, whoever catches him is going to make Mondo amounts of money.
Mondo,
because
1930s.
Because he's the most dangerous criminal that's walking around on the Manhattan streets. Tracy, we shouldn't be fiddling around with gangland.
He's a cop, by the way.
I'm a cop.
Oh, no. Got it. Okay, wait, I love this.
Meanwhile... Tess was being held hostage by Big Boy Caprice. Let me go, you fool! Not in your life, not in your life. I'm gonna keep you so we can get Tracy around here.
Okay. That'll do.
That was inspirational.
I was totally not making that up as I went along. The thing you guys don't realize is that is both sides of a tape. It's 2 hours long.
Oh my god.
It's longer than the movie.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
That's awesome.
All right.
I say let's review that next week.
Yeah, I want to review Chris's.
I suppose it would
tape.
Only be fair. Oh my gosh. All right, well, we just watched Dick Tracy with fresh eyes. So, let's see how it holds up. Well, the film immediately and very confidently establishes its tone, all the primary colors. And the thing is, it's not just that it's a colorful movie, it's that it's always the same shade when you see them. You know, it's the same red, whether it's a guy's coat or a lamp or a wall. And so it's that is very striking as well. And this is also, it's probably the most memorable an impressive thing about the film, just the look of it, the colors and the matte paintings and the way everything is just so meticulously stylized. But what's sort of funny to me is that there's a hooker in heels stomping around upstairs.
That is impressive.
No, what's sort of funny to me is that everyone points to this decision of, you know, the look of the movie as the indicator that this is super faithful to the comics. And that's not totally true. It's mostly faithful in very superficial ways. It looks like the comics. But I don't think this is the Dick Tracy of the comics, and it's certainly not the tone. Like, not really. It's a little sanitized and a little softer, and that's fine. I'm just saying that, yes, they did an admirable job of recreating the visuals, but this is just my own opinion. I'm not sure I'd say they did as great a job translating the spirit of the material. I mean, again, I mean, I'm no expert, so maybe I'm way off the mark with that.
I'm also not an expert, but yeah, no, I felt like it probably isn't true to the comic strip, but it definitely was a jarring enough stylistic choice that you were forced to think about comic strips while you were watching it.
Okay, yeah.
If that makes any sense. Like you knew very, like kind of like The Matrix, when The Matrix came out, and there were angles, like camera angles that you just had never really seen, you know, used in movies, like, you know, in certain ways. And you're like, wow, yeah, you know, that does kind of look like, you know, for The Matrix, it looked a lot like anime, and Dick Tracy, while it doesn't look like the Dick Tracy comic strip, like, there are certain shots that you're like, movies don't do this. Yeah. Like, you know, they just don't use these shots. It's really, like, super ahead of its time in terms of that. Like, I was going to say earlier in the intro, when I watched the intro to this movie, like, just the opening credits, it was like, I don't know if Sin City even happens as a movie if it wasn't for the way that, you know, the way this movie opened, like, just the opening credits of it was like, this is Sin City's opening credits.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing is, I think maybe when you put it into live action, these elements seem incongruous because you've got this hard-boiled throwback stuff with the gangsters and the corrupt government officials and all these gunfights. And meanwhile, everyone's dressed in these silly Dayglo outfits that make it look like the fashion show from Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Yes.
And and they live in a world that looks like, you know, Tom and Jerry could come running through at any moment. As a kid, it definitely didn't bother me. As an adult, I'm sort of torn because for the sake of the story, I guess there were points where I wish they'd done a more straightforward nod to 30s and 40s and gangster movies, just visually. But then on the other hand, that over-the-top style is definitely the best part of the film. So I guess you just sort of have to admire the strangeness of it all and embrace it and the risk they took in doing it this way, especially in the wake of Batman's success, where I'm sure at some point someone was arguing for something that looked more like that.
Absolutely.
But yeah, these opening moments with the kid played by Charlie Cosmo, who is as great in this as he was in Hook. He really is a really good actor.
Oh, I love this kid so much. I think every word he says in this movie, I'm watching it again as an adult, I'm like, this is just, he's perfect. He's not sappy. He absolutely tugs on my heartstrings. Like, the moment when he first meets Tess and she's like, who's takes care of you? And he says, who takes care of you?
Yeah.
He has me 100%. I love this kid. Love him.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do too. And he's sneaking around this card game with all these criminals, and right off the bat, you know, we see the exaggerated features of these guys, the extreme makeup. It's just going to be commonplace in this world, you know, the world of this story. And most of the guys look amazing. You know, the villains all look so much like the comic strip counterparts, with the exception of Big Boy, but we can get to that later. But I have to say, Little Face, that never worked for me. It just looks like a regular face surrounded by a big, fat fucking head. I have no issue with the rest of the makeup. It's just this particular illusion I could never get on board with. And it's like, if they hadn't called him Little Face, I would have been like, oh, okay, so there's the rat guy and here's Fat Head. I mean, I don't know. I just...
Yeah, Egghead. I was like, oh, he must be named Egghead. And then they called him Little Face. Like, his face is normal sized.
Yeah.
His head is huge.
Yes, it's the rest of him that really is the issue. But, yeah. Well, I do love that, you know, all the cops are pretty normal looking, and it's really the criminals that all have these extreme makeup jobs. And I love that Warren Beatty got this incredible cast together and then made them all unrecognizable.
Yeah.
In these opening moments, I remember as a kid thinking it was kind of a rough start, but I couldn't put my finger on why. And as an adult, you guys are probably not going to agree with me, but I thought the editing in this was goofy as hell. And It's a little bizarre to me that a film that cuts in and out of scenes so quickly still winds up feeling so long. I mean, they teach you in, you know, a lot of like screenwriting lessons where they say when you're putting together a scene, get in late and get out early. Like, just stick to the stuff that matters. And in this movie, there are scenes, not all of them, obviously, but quite a few that feel like, okay, we're there for the early part and we're there for the late part, but we missed the important, the stuff you'd really actually want to see.
I think like my overall take on this movie is that it does seem like they got so wrapped up with what they had, design-wise and talent-wise. They've got all these amazing actors. They have all these great musical numbers with Madonna, and they have all of these beautiful sets and everything like that. And I feel like they just rolled around in it a little too much. And I think, yeah, as maybe in editing, they really needed somebody with a gigantic machete to come through and be like, no, 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 no. I think you could easily lose like a half hour of this movie and it would be a lot.
I mean, it's not neater. Yeah, there's certainly, there's an issue with stuff that could be cut, but also for me, there was as much stuff where I felt like, whoa, whoa, wait, wait, I want to see that. There's a moment where he's sitting with the kid and he's basically telling him, I have no choice at this point but to turn you over to the orphanage. And then it cuts to another scene and I'm like, his reaction maybe. Like, there's no...
Yeah.
That's the,
how does he feel about this?
That's the part of the scene we need to get into. And there's kind of a lot of that going on. Mm-hmm. But these opening moments, they're all about establishing that Big Boy Caprice is plotting this takeover of the underworld. And Al Pacino is magnificent.
Oh, my God.
I think he's... Oh, is he good in this? But, you know, the movie's, it's bouncing back and forth between his plotting and this cat and mouse game between him and Tracy as, you know, Tracy tries to take him down. And, of course, you mix in all the stuff with the kid and Tracy's girlfriend, Tess, who wants him to take a desk job and blah, 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 blah. There was a point like 30 minutes in where I was thinking to myself, this movie needs to get to the point. A lot's happening, but there's really no central thrust to the narrative. And part of the problem is that they never really establish Dick Tracy any further than, oh, here's your hero. You're going to root for him because he's the guy on the poster. And I have to say, you guys, I think my biggest problem with the film is that Warren Beatty is miscast. He is so dull and devoid of charisma.
I so agree with that. I remembering this movie, I remembered all the villains and how great they looked and how especially Al Pacino, he's so perfect for this movie.
Yeah.
And Warren Beatty, like, this was my first Warren Beatty movie. I had never seen him before. And I remember there being a lot of like hullabaloo about Warren Beatty being in this movie and, you know, it being like comparable to Batman and this was going to be his Batman. And then, yeah, I was like, eh, I guess I couldn't believe that, you know, when like my parents told me, look, he's a very big star. Warren Beatty's huge. I was like, why? Like he didn't do anything in this. Like he didn't look like he even wanted to be there, but this was like his pet project. Yeah. He loved this movie.
Yeah. Really?
So yeah, I totally agree with you on that.
I mean, my impression of the comic strip was always that Tracy was very gruff, very no-nonsense, sort of a man's man. Beatty is just too soft. He looks so disinterested. Every time they cut to him, every reaction shot, he looks like he just woke up from a nap and he has no idea what's going on. I mean, Google image search it right now, I promise. It's every time. And the other problem is that it's one thing to have a character that keeps his cool, but it's something else entirely to have one this detached. And it's a pretty big issue because if he never cares about anything, well, neither do I. And, you know, like when he gets locked up in the basement of his girlfriend's building at one point, you know, he's tied to the chair, the bomb's going to go off. He flat out doesn't give a shit. And not in a tough guy, I'm already two steps ahead of you kind of way, but just because. And if he doesn't feel like he's in danger, why should I? And it's not like he even had a plan. You know, like if the kid hadn't shown up, he would have died. And then later when he's in prison, again, it's like, does this even bother you? Are you even paying attention? I know I'm getting way too far ahead. The point is this idea that, okay, So I think the district attorney, played by Dick Van Dyke, who's great, by the way, he refers to Tracy as a hothead. And I was like, hothead? The movie never establishes that. The guy has the demeanor of a math teacher.
That's so funny. I didn't get that at all. I never had any problem with Warren Beatty as Dick Tracy. I bought in right away. I'm like, yeah, all right. He's real cool, and he just rolls with the punches on everything, and I like him. I think he's kind of suave and attractive, and he handles his gun well, and I have no problem with Warren Beatty in this movie.
Okay.
But
so we know
on.
Who she wants to F.
Yeah, I was going to say, the game just got really easy.
And the game is on.
You don't know.
Well,
please.
I think a lot of my other complaints, I think I might be able to overlook if I thought this lead character was in any way engaging. I don't go to an Indiana Jones movie because I really want to see what artifact he's after this time. It's because I love that character. Everything else is sort of secondary to that because, well, I mean, my other big complaint would be the plot. I think it's unfocused and meandering, but I could say the same thing about that first Batman movie. So I would sort of understand someone saying, look, this is an excuse to get all these characters on screen, and you really shouldn't overthink that aspect of it. It's not even that Tracy is the least interesting character in his own movie, because you could say that about the comic strips, too. His rogues gallery was amazing and definitely, you know, a progenitor to Batman's. But in this film, he's just not an interesting character to me, period. He barely registers. And I have to say, I just found the whole thing shockingly uninvolving because of that. I just couldn't get into this.
Well, I think part of what works for me is, this is my ignorance in this, because I remember there being a comic strip, and I maybe got through a frame and a half before I was like, this is terrible. I'm never going to read this again. I didn't like it as a kid, and I had no interest. So to me, that was, I had no expectations for this character at all. I just knew that he existed somewhere. So for him to show up in bright yellow and be pretty handsome and cool, I was like, oh, great. That's him.
Well,
got it.
I didn't go into this with a lot of ideas about who Dick Tracy was either. It certainly wasn't like going to see a Superman or Batman movie where there's this certain expectations or whatever. I just felt that even within the world of this movie, Dick Tracy, as he is in this film, separate from comic books, they don't establish much about him. Like, if there was this idea that, like, look, he's a good cop, he believes in the law, but sometimes he steps over the edge, and he's so passionate about catching Big Boy that he's going to break the rules sometimes. But, okay, fine. The movie doesn't really do that, though. It alludes to it. We don't see it. We don't know why he's so obsessed with catching Big Boy, which would help if there was some personal stake in all of this. We don't know why he takes in the kid. Like, if he is such a law-abiding, somebody who respects the law and follows it, like, why he doesn't turn the kid over to the authorities right away. I mean, like, I don't mind that he keeps him. It's one of those things that's like, but why? Was he an orphan? Can him and Tess not have a kid of their own? I don't care what the reason is. I just want a reason. I was actually going to talk about the, this is really random, but I wanted to mention that when the first time we meet Big Boy is when he's giving Lips a bath, bath. It got sexy for a second.
Where's your rubber ducky?
When I was a kid, I didn't understand what was happening. I thought, I thought it was oatmeal.
It probably was, right?
And I was like, well, that's not a bad way to go. By the second time it happens, I had obviously figured it out. But yeah, death by breakfast. But, oh, you know what? Let's talk about Madonna. I remember her getting some flack for this movie. And even now, I saw a lot of people singling her out for being the weak link in the chain here. I think her first scene with Tracy, where he follows her into the dressing room, first of all, for a kid's movie, wow.
So steamy.
I'm sorry, Madonna, I can't hear you over the sound of, oh my god, I can see your tits. But I think she's actually really good in this scene. The innuendo is a little... Well, it's not even innuendo. It's just sex, sex, sex. It's great. We should have it. I sweat a lot. Are you picturing me naked? You don't have to. Just look down. Are we having sex yet? It's fucking... It's so crazy. But after this scene, I think she's really, really good here. I really like her delivery, and even with some of these atrocious lines. But after this, for the rest of the movie, Madonna is sort of a mixed bag. And it bothers me that... okay, I hate to go down this road because I feel like someone's going to take me to task for this. The two main female roles in this movie, you know, of course, Breasty Hoo-Hooey or whatever her name is all hot for Tracy the second she sees him, even though he's a block of wood. Like, why would she like this guy? I read a lot of Curious George as a kid, so that outfit's really steaming my vegetables. I don't fucking know. But no, listen, her main character traits are that she wears Hubba Hubba Nakey Time outfits and she wants to sit on his banana. I mean, that's like... And then the other woman, Tess, is a naggy girl next door, you know, who just wants to get married and settle down and all the other stuff movies tell us women want. And I know we've come a long way since 1990, but it just feels so lazy. And it's one of those things where both of these women... They're only defined by their relationship to this man.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it unfair to single out the broad characterization when all of the characterization is pretty two-dimensional? I don't know.
Yeah. I sort of agree with that, that I think everybody in this movie is sort of a stereotype or not that overly developed as a person. So I actually had no problem with the female characters. In fact, Tess, I absolutely love.
I like the actress a lot. I really think she brings a lot to it.
She does. And I love she's... I don't think she's too naggy. I don't think she's too... I think she would like to get married, but she's like a safety first kind of a gal. She's like, you're getting shot at all the time, and that's just how it's going to be, and that's fine. Like, then there's nothing that's going to happen. I like living alone. She keeps saying that.
It's just every time they talk, it's about either through subtext or through very overt, on-the-nose dialogue, it's about... You're putting yourself in harm's way. Don't expect me to like it. When are we going to get married? That's so we live alone. We like living alone. Okay, blah, 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 blah. And so she's either talking to him about their relationship, or when he's not in the scene, she's talking to someone else about her relationship with him.
Right.
Like, who is she without him? And it's just, the thing is, the love triangle and the relationship stuff, it takes up a lot more screen time than you'd expect it to. And so I just sort of wish it weren't so hacky. I don't know. I also, this is random. I don't really like Madonna's singing voice. Not overall. Like, mainly just in the one song where she goes super low, where she's like, no one I kiss, babe, ever.
Don't you want to have sex with me?
She's like, I always get my man. Yeah, because that's you.
Oh, okay. I love that song. And, Bernadette Peters has a fantastic recording of that song. And that is usually what I hear when I hear Madonna sing it. I just kind of override it with Bernadette Peters, who might have been a fantastic choice for this role.
Yeah,
but
actually,
she just wasn't that hot right then. And Warren Beatty and Madonna were dating.
Yes,
so.
I was going to say. Yeah.
Naturally.
It's really just, it's mainly the word ever, like, ever.
Ever fights me again. Yeah.
Bullwinkle was in this movie.
I'm really.
Ever fights me again. Hey, Dick Tracy.
I'm really going to boost the bass in this one, so we have a lot of angry listeners.
It's just going to come out like, Simba, you're my son, the one true king.
I mean, I'm impressed with the range, don't get me wrong. It is just... Well, this is probably a good lead-in to Tracy's other main relationship in the film, which is with the kid. This storyline... I believe is right out of the comic strip. And in general, I think this works a lot better than his Betty and Veronica dilemma. Because, you know, you see a little kid show up in a movie like this and it's sort of like, oh boy, here we go. But it's more understated than I remembered it. And I liked that.
I actually had no problem with the no explanation, and I never felt like he wasn't going to take him to the orphanage. I just felt like they had such good chemistry right away. He loved this kid's stinky little spunk. So he just kind of put it off a little while. They'd say a bunch of times, he smells bad.
Right, but that's not what you just said.
that's not quite what you just said, but moving on.
Yeah, between that and the Janet Jackson nonsense a few episodes back.
That is the way love goes.
You're painting a picture, Tom.
I don't know what it is, kid, but I love your stinky little spunk.
Oh, my God.
I don't need to know your name.
I don't know why I associate with either of you.
I should take you back to the orphanage, but I'm not gonna. I'm just not gonna do it.
Look, and he's hesitant to move in with his longtime girlfriend. Rebuffing Madonna's advances.
He's like a good kid. He's a good kid. And he's had a hard time, and Dick Tracy understands.
It's not going to get any easier.
He's just looking out for it. Oh, no.
It's going to be pretty hard.
No. Before we go any further,
let's not go any further.
With this, obviously, I'm saying some not so nice things about this movie. Okay, so I just want to say really quickly that, if you're listening to this and that bothers you, I am legitimately sorry, because I know that people can be very defensive when it comes to their taste in films. You make fun of something they care about, and to them it almost feels like you're making fun of them. And then you throw in the added element of childhood nostalgia and something that was very special to them at this really sort of, I don't know, uncorrupt and innocent time in their lives. And it's really easy to see why they would get so worked up about, you know, some asshole ranting about it on a podcast. And I can already see comments like, you liked Problem Child, but not Dick Tracy. You have shitty taste and you're an idiot. And maybe that's true. But look, first of all, that's a really easy and lazy way of dismissing an opinion you don't agree with. The fact is, that is not how we watch movies. That's not how people who make that criticism watch movies. It's a case-by-case basis. You go into each with a different set of expectations, and often a very, very different mindset. And I think we always try to be very fair about looking at a movie and sort of getting a sense of what it's trying to accomplish and how successfully it does that. So if someone wants to write off everything I say based on something I said about another movie, you absolutely can do that. But I just want to make it clear that I think it's important that everyone understands that this isn't calculated. I didn't decide that my role today was going to be to contradict whatever the popular opinion was. It's not like I'm trying to be the Simon Cowell of this show. And believe me, I have listened to podcasts where people talk about movies, and I've heard that guy. There's a lot of that guy all over the internet. And it's not so much that a person is disagreeing with my taste as it is that they're just being really shitty and condescending about it. Like, there's a real tone of I'm right and you're wrong. I really hope that's not how I come across, because that is not how I view things. And if that is how I come across sometimes, then let me just say, I'm sorry. That's absolutely not my intention. I'm just being honest about what I think. And maybe this is unnecessary. I'm being preemptive about a backlash that isn't coming. I just think we now live in a world of hyperbole, you know, especially when it comes to pop culture. And that makes looking at a movie like this sort of challenging, because even narrowing it down to the comic book movie genre, it's certainly not the worst. It's also far from the best, but it seems like nobody likes a middle ground opinion anymore. You're either on one side or the other. Something is either amazing or it sucks. And I just want everyone to understand I'm not saying either. And that's the end of my rant. I'm sorry. I just want to put that out there before we go any further.
I think that your criticisms have been nuanced and well thought out. And yeah, and I totally thought we were gonna just like hate on Problem Child for the entire run, but I don't think I'm alone. I think, like, wasn't the consensus we all liked it more than we did as children?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I liked it as a kid. I liked it even more as an adult. And I think a lot of that maybe had to do with just not expecting much from it at all and being very pleasantly surprised that, like, oh, it's not a particularly smart movie, but it's smarter than I remember it. It's funnier than I remember it. And so with Dick Tracy, again, you go in with a different mindset and different expectations, and I don't know.
I can say this about Dick Tracy with the we were talking about women's relationships to him and how everything just kind of seemed like very broad and not very dimensional, multidimensional at all. It kind of felt to me like they were going for something that was almost maybe like a 30s kind of like B film matinee thing. I mean, maybe that was me reading too much into it, but like everything's, you know, kind of like broad, you know, I am a lawman and therefore I am good, and I am a gangster and therefore I am bad, and I'm a woman and therefore these are the things that are expected of me. Right. And it just kind of seemed like they were going with something that was kind of reminiscent of the era that Dick Tracy was created in.
Totally.
Okay. You know, that's what I get from it, which is why I kind of forgive, you know, it, not only the women, the female roles in the movie being broad, but like kind of everyone is like that. But that's also why I adore Al Pacino's performance in this, because he finds something in what could have been a very like phone it in type of role. He found, you know, not truth, but like, you know, he found what something he could latch onto and make a character out of.
Right.
Yeah.
No, yeah, that's totally valid. And when you look at a character like Naked Boobs McMahon voice, she...
Nobody knows.
That is a very classic femme fatale film noir trope.
Exactly, yeah.
Right down to her scheming behind everybody's back and, you know, having a plan of her own. Yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. And it is probably unfair to really criticize that aspect of the film too strongly when it is sort of an overall, it's happening in a very general sense with the film overall, with all of the characters. There's a part of me that doesn't think it's wrong to wish that maybe they had aspired to something a little bit more than that.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's kind of like just a misplaced homage to this genre that like, hey, women are kind of just objects in this genre of film. And, oh, by the way, minorities don't exist in this kind of film. Like
yeah, oh minorities definitely.
Yeah, like where's dark-skinned McMurphy, the gangster? Like, he doesn't exist. He's not there.
Chester Gould really started getting less and less creative with these names.
Yeah.
Darky McShoot-em-up. Whoa, Chester.
I was going to say McStabs a lot, but that's exactly right.
I think both of the girls have jobs, which I think is something. I mean, it's not like they're just sitting around waiting for Dick Tracy.
That's true.
Breathless is plotting for things, and I'll tell you, Miss Trueheart can throw the heck out of a baseball. So they have other, you know, skills. They have other stuff going on outside of the men.
The baseball goes in the plus column.
It does. It's something. God. She's sassy. She takes care of herself. I got no problem with these generalized women.
Okay.
From like a bygone era. And
Madonna can totally make her voice sound like whatever the hell the blank was supposed to be. Like,
oh, you mean Princess Leia's bounty hunter voice from Return of the Jedi? That's it's the same voice.
I've been doing that since we discovered we were going to watch, since we, like, you know, decided on Dick Tracy. I've just been going like, my child is very scared of me.
Oh.
Well, I guess we can just go through the rest of the plot really quick and just sort of highlight the stuff that stood out. I wanted to mention that at Big Boy's meeting, where he gets all the mobsters in the same room and tells them they're going to form this alliance, and, you know, James Caan decides he wants no part of it. He goes outside, his car blows up. Did Big Boy pre-rig everybody's car to explode just in case?
Yeah, yes. I wondered.
Because it's a good thing no one was like, hey, great plan, totally on board, but I got to leave early, pick up my kid. Boom splat. But no, this is probably my favorite Big Boy scene. Either this or when he discovers the room is bugged. That cracks me up. Oh my gosh. The way he gets right up on that, yeah, on the table. And just right, I love it. Oh my gosh, I love it. But yeah, so they try to bribe Tracy. He refuses. They attempt to blow him up, and 30 seconds, no more dick is still my favorite line in the movie. Tess catches man voice making out with Tracy. And this is is another scene where the innuendo, it's just, he's talking about an ice cream cone and she goes, oh you better lick it or eat it fast because it's starting to drip. Madonna, you are disgusting.
Mouth on you, Madonna.
Take your Cruella de Vil dress and your leaky lady parts and go find a love interest who doesn't look like he's perpetually smelling a fart. I don't know why it's that. Maybe that's sexy for other guys hear that and they go, oh. I heard that and I had a real reaction to that line.
Lick it fast because it's starting to drip like my vagina.
That may as well have been.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me just correct you right now because she says it's starting to run.
That's worse.
That is so much worse.
Check it.
That's so much more.
Check it.
No.
And by that I mean I have venereal diseases.
Oh my god. I had no idea. I was not expecting this like hate reaction.
I think it's a disgusting line, and that is so worse.
That's what boys like.
That is not what boys like. That's not what boys like. That's not what guys want.
Oh my god, I gotta stop putting on my man voice when I'm flirting.
Hey you, you're gonna eat that hot dog? Better eat it fast.
all right. Okay, I can fix that. It's not a problem.
I feel like we've had a breakthrough here, Donna.
Yeah, it's great. No, it's good.
Hurry up. I've got so much discharge.
God, that's so gross.
Well, listen, we're now...
Oh, you're so foul.
We're over an hour into the film at this point, and they reveal this new character, the blank, you know, this faceless dude. And here's the thing. Number one, we're awfully far into the story to be putting a new piece on the chessboard. Number two, when I was a kid, I never questioned that... Because of the world this movie takes place in, I just thought this was a guy with no face.
Yep.
So when they pull the mask off at the end, I was like, oh, was this was a mystery? Was this a whodunit? Or was the surprise supposed to be that they're counting on the fact that we're not going to think it's a mask? I don't know. Whatever. Either way, I guess it's a great big if you give a shit. Well, anyway, the cops do the raid on Big Boy's Club just so they can sneak away and bug his office. And this means that Tracy's able to cripple his operation because he always knows, you know, where he's going, what he's planning. But Big Boy figures it out. He goes to kill the guy that's been listening in on him by giving him a bath, an oatmeal bath. It was great for his skin. But when Tracy comes in to save him, does he really need to switch places with the guy? Like, wouldn't the surprise have worked just as well if the bad guys turned around and he was not, like, he was standing there not in covered oatmeal? In cement?
Yeah. It's like switching the coolers out in Arrested Development. But that 1 second that it buys us might be a good time.
No, because it's either, the difference is, like...
I'm not saying that I like it. I mean, you're not even letting me give a chance. Okay. I'm saying it's not a good idea that he steps in the oatmeal. I don't know why he steps in the oatmeal. That was probably a bad decision. As an adult, I had a moment of like, what? That I kind of enjoyed because it was like, well, that's so silly.
He's a real hothead. You never know what he's going to do next. This guy doesn't play by the rules. I'll fucking step in the cement. Fuck you. I don't care if my gun breaks.
I mean, I had like a giggle as an adult, but you know, it was a bad decision.
I had more of
Shouldn't have done it. Yeah, you know what I thought? Again, that was like them being like so excited about all the stuff they had, and Warren Beatty being like, I'm so excited about all this oatmeal stuff. I want to get in it! And there was no one to tell him not to, and so he just did it, and it stayed in the movie. That's probably what happened.
That's a fact.
He's like, that looks like fun.
What do you tell the director of the movie? Like,
Seriously.
He directed this. I want to get in the oatmeal bath.
Sure thing, boss. And so he did it.
Yeah, it's your job.
I guess that's what you're going to do then. Go for it. Yeah. Like, there's just no one to tell him, like, don't do that. Don't do that. And there should have been, but there wasn't. And that's too bad, but... It made me giggle as an
adult. I just feel like as Warren Beatty, I'd be standing there on set, you're ready to roll, they're about to dump all this shit on you, and as they're setting it up, you just go, you know, guys, I think this also works if I'm maybe standing a couple feet in front of it. Well, then from here, this back and forth with Big Boy continues. And it for me, it all gets so needlessly and hopelessly convoluted. Like, okay, so they want Tracy out of the picture, so they kidnap Tess. And then they forge a letter from her to Tracy to, you know, come meet me. And then he gets knocked out by some gas. They take him to a motel room. They stage an argument between him and the DA. They kill the DA. They wake up Tracy. They frame him for the murder. He goes to prison. And for fuck's sake, how about... Hey, we've got this gas that'll knock him out. Oh, cool. You gas him, I'll shoot him, bury him in oatmeal, bingo bango, problem solved. It just gets so like, what? Wait, what is the goal here? What's the plan? And it's really,
again,
it's especially pointless because he's out of prison 5 minutes later. Like, the passage of time is really unclear at this point, too. I know he gets out on New Year's Eve or whatever, but... He's locked up long enough for Big Boy to get his empire back on its feet and whatever. But because the movie often resolves its conflicts not long after introducing them, not always, but a few times, it doesn't feel like this is a cat and mouse game with increasingly severe consequences. Not until the very, very end. It just feels like, oh, you slap me in the face, I slap you in the face. Oh, you slap me in the face again, I slap you in the face again. Actually, it's kind of funny thinking of, I just realized it's sort of funny how similar the plot of this is to The Dark Knight. Like, you've got the unstable goon who cuts down a bunch of crooks to establish himself, and then he holds a meeting, you know, with the heads of all the major crime syndicates, kind of declares himself the new leader, and then goes back and forth with the hero for the rest of the movie. Peas in a pod, those two, I tell you.
It's the same movie. It's the same
it is.
Movie.
The other thing I like is that as it's heading towards that final shootout, the climax, all this stuff, and the climax is like 100 minutes long. That's a lie. The movie's 100 minutes long. but it fucking feels like it. But it seems like they, you know, the writers, they got to a point where they were like, oh shit, the movie's almost over and we've still got like 20 bad guys here. And so in a few minutes... They just execute fucking everybody, blah, 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 kabang.
Are we listening to your radio?
Schrader presents Dick Tracy.
Except that was more like,
oh god, he turned the tape back on.
That's an explosion. I'm Dick Tracy. I'm Tess Trueheart.
Let me go, you fool.
That's awesome.
Well, it's like it's crazy violent and so ruthless compared to the rest of the film. And I don't know if anybody else found themselves thinking that Flat Top's death may have been a nod to Bonnie and Clyde. Because Warren Beatty is obviously in Bonnie and Clyde. Like, they shoot up the car, he gets out, they keep shooting him.
Right, he's Bonnie.
I thought maybe that was just Warren, just a cute little, well, not cute. Murder's adorable.
It's a cute little
Isn't
thing.
It funny he dies the same? Oh, death.
It might just be the only way he knows how to do a death with a Tommy gun.
Well, this is always how it ends, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you had to die. That was the way it was in the time. You got out of your car and you kept dying.
You kept talking. I also really love... The last scene of this movie really threw me for a loop, where I was like, oh my god, the fucking proposal, where he's like, and he just fucking throws the ring door, and he's like, fucking marry me. And he runs out of the diner. The kid's tagging along. I guess the kid's gonna go on these super dangerous missions with Dick Tracy now. I just thought, like, this is a weird note to go out on. The kid's gonna die in the next scene, and it's a hell of a marriage proposal. What a romantic.
Did you notice that that Big Boy tells Tess that he loves her?
I did not notice.
Anybody
that.
Else?
No.
No.
Yeah,
I was not
he does when they're doing the chase scene. And which I have to say, which is one of the huge parts of why I love Tess so much, is she totally sucks it up when she's kidnapped and, like, in all this danger. She's not screaming, she's not crying, she's not whimpering about, like, pay attention to me, it's getting closer, Tracy. She's silent. She's silent. And I was thrilled. So she keeps her mouth shut the entire time. She's being dragged all over the city in heels. Big Boy ties her up. He's, quote, Nietzsche. He's having thoughts. They're going away. He crushes a can, and he looks at her. He ties her up. He, like, lays her down, and he's like, you know I love you. And she's like, hey. The only time she makes a tiny sound is like, ugh, and she like bangs her head against the gear and she's like, whatever, crush me.
Yeah, I
ride it out.
I have to admit that this is, I have seen this final showdown with them so few times because, like I said, I usually turned it off way before this point when I was a kid. And even now, by the time it got to this point, I had kind of checked out. I mean, I was watching, I was comprehending, but I was thinking, like, what am I going to make for dinner? And I'm just not super. I can't even remember how Big Boy died. He falls, right? There's a clock involved.
Yeah. He's in the. It's the gears for the bridge.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I've been holding on to this little gem of a trivia bit for a while, but it does need to be said because it informs so much of the conversation. There is a director's cut of this movie that is like half an hour, 35 minutes longer than this movie.
Oh my God.
But what am I trying to say? The head of the studio at Disney basically made them cut it down. The running time of this movie is what? 105?
Yeah, 105.
Yeah, it was a 135-minute version. So it's over 2 hours long. And so, like, you know, with the editing and with the kind of confused, you know, storylines and motivations, like, for all we know, this is a great movie at 135 minutes. But, like, who is sitting through that for 135 minutes? Like, no one is going to see that.
If the pacing is the way it is in this version, to me, that's absolutely unwatchable.
Right.
It would be impossible for me to get
through. But if they just like kind of basically quote unquote cut the fat, but what they basically did was just make it like, just barely legally a narrative, like, you know, it kind of works as a story with a beginning, middle, and end.
Like Problem Child.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's very possible. I've never seen the 135-minute version. It's very possible that the extra half hour of time is what they needed to fill in all the blanks with the rest of this movie.
That's possible. But for now, let's just keep praising Problem Child and taking Dick Tracy to task. The audience is really going to love that. I feel like everyone's really going to be on our side with that one.
I gotta say, okay, I think, yeah, probably, no, I think Dick Tracy is a way better movie than Problem Child. Dick Tracy is totally has problems, but I love this movie.
I think it's it's definitely a better made film, definitely. I would say in just about every respect other than the script, and that's way too important for me. It's not enough to say the rest of it works and the story doesn't and the lead character's a little flat. Those are deal breakers for me. And I don't know.
It seems like if you were building, like say this movie was coming out today, right? Like this week, Dick Tracy's opening. There is no way on earth they would have every villain in the Dick Tracy, you know, mythos in one movie. Like, every character from Dick Tracy is in this movie, and they all die. Like, how are you building a franchise? Like, I mean, maybe...
But that's the beautiful thing, is they weren't building a freaking franchise.
No, they definitely were. They wanted this to be...
Why does everything have to be a franchise? I'm so over it. I can't stand it.
They wanted this to be their Batman, and the thing is... I'm not particularly offended by that idea, because the main difference between the story of this film and the story of the Dick Tracy comics is that those were... more police procedural sort of things of him solving one crime, one villain at a time. They very rarely, if ever, teamed up. And this movie is sort of I read somewhere that Warren Beatty, just in case he never got to make a sequel, he wanted to throw them all in. It does seem like they're shooting themselves in the foot in terms of, well, now what do you do? Where are you going to go from here?
There was originally a script by when Chester Gould was still alive. There was a script in the early 80s by Tom Mankiewicz.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I think it's technically pronounced Mankiewicz, but I don't know how he pronounced it. That only had it was like Flat Top was like the sub-villain. Like, he wasn't the big bad, as Joss Whedon would say. Yeah. And the big bad was the blank.
And it that had was that great opening scene, right?
Yeah. The
police sketch artist.
Right. There's a wounded police officer in the hospital, and he, you know, the police sketch artist is like, you know, he's asking him to describe the guy who did this, and all he's got is a blank face, and the cop goes, "That's him," and then dies. Like, that's great. Like, that's awesome.
A good setup.
Yeah, but you know, it would have, if you were building a franchise, two villains would have been fine.
Just or make them anonymous stooges, because that's ultimately all they are. Even a great villain like Flat Top is just. He's just one of Big Boy's henchmen. So just make him henchmen if you're going to go that route.
Right. But I mean, and I understand, like, you know, you don't want to turn everything into a franchise. Like, I'm kind of sick of everything becoming a franchise as well. But that's definitely what they wanted to do with this movie. Like, I'm not making a judgment on whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, making it a franchise. What I'm saying is that was their goal going into it. And it was horribly misguided to kill off every character if you were hoping the movie did well enough to make more of them.
And the only reason, apparently, that we never got a sequel was that the rights got all tied up with somebody suing someone else and Warren Beatty not being able to straighten it out with this production company. It did well enough. It didn't do the kind of business they were hoping for, but it did well enough that a second film was absolutely on the table. They just could never get it off the ground for all these silly legal reasons. But I don't know where they would have gone. The thing, though, is, I mean, Donna, I understand all the stuff you're saying, and I respect that the things that I don't really like about the movie, they don't bother you, or you can look past them, or there's more to it. I just feel like this is a criticism that we make with a lot of big blockbuster movies in particular, where you say something is all flash and no substance, style over substance, or whatever. And that's absolutely what this movie is. If it didn't have this production design, this amazing cinematography, we wouldn't still be talking about it. Nobody would remember it as fondly. That's kind of the main thing it has going for it. And I just don't think it's fair then to give this film a pass for essentially that, for being style over substance. There's not a lot of meat on the bone here when so many other movies are really raked over the coals for that same thing. There's just not enough for me to hang my hat on here beyond the fact that, like, this is a really great-looking movie.
Yeah, if the palette for this movie was like, say, another movie set in that same time period, say it was shot like Chinatown, you know, not the same writing, obviously, but just like, you know, that's the way the camera looked, you know, that's just the feel that you got. I don't even think I would have seen Dick Tracy as a child. And I definitely, I mean, like, I definitely wouldn't have. It looked like a cartoon come to life. Mm-hmm. And I definitely wouldn't remember it fondly at all. Which I did. I do remember this movie fondly.
I mean, I absolutely agree. I mean, I understand absolutely where you're coming from. I totally get that. I think, you know, you're probably right. That's
there's no right and wrong here. It's just...
Well, of course, but I like what I'll say and stand by with this movie is that I think that this design affected me so much personally, and I obviously affected so many other people. It was so striking that it does get an unfair pass. It does get an unreasonable spot in my heart because it really did. It sort of opened up my mind to things that I did not, had not occurred to me at 8 years old, that you could live in another kind of world, that, like, very theatrical, these, like, backdrops, these painted scenes. Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful and it's so complete and specific, the world that they live in. Watching it as an adult, the characters don't hold up as much, I guess. I think Warren Beatty is charming enough, and I just went along with he's a detective, so he's a good guy, and they're criminals, so they're bad guys. But if you delve any further, you're right, there's really not much there.
I mean, there's certainly something to be said for that. If it affected you in that specific regard, and whoever else watched this and was inspired by it, or for whatever work it did in helping push this genre, the comic book movie, further. You know, I mean, that's all, those are admirable things. I certainly don't want to take away from that. My feeling is just mainly that it's like you said, Donna, it's such a complete and fully realized world. And I can't help but feel like everyone involved just deserves a better script. There's so little momentum to it. And I think if there had been a really solid story, this might have been regarded as one of the all-time greats in this genre. And
yeah.
I mean, it has some great performances, great effects, great music. The Danny Elfman score is great. That was one of the things that really stuck with me, even all these years later. And now it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you guys remember the live-action Flash TV show, but that came out the same year, and the main theme of that is very similar to Dick Tracy's theme.
I didn't even remember that Danny Elfman did the music for this. And when I turned on the DVD and like, it's the first thing, you know, you get the music, you get hit with the music before you get hit with anything else.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, that sounds a lot like Danny Elfman. And then I was like, I was ready to paint the whole movie as like a ripoff of Batman. Cause like Batman came out the year before and I was like, oh no, it's actually Danny Elfman. Never mind.
Totally,
you know, play ball. It's totally fair.
All right. Well, I mean, it seems like we've all kind of already summed up our overall feelings on the film. It got a little heavy, so why don't we do something fun? Donna, I think you have a game for us.
It's time to play Who Would You Be and Who Would You F?
Let's start with Donna. We never start with Donna. So let's guess. Okay, I guess Donna. I'm going to say, well, you loved Breathless as a kid, so that's...
I think she'd want to be Tess Trueheart. Because she can throw a baseball right good.
Oh, that was a huge, huge selling point. Yeah, Donna likes the baseball.
Donna likes the baseball.
All right. Okay, I'm just gonna stick with Breathless Mahoney. If it was that big of a deal to you as a kid, especially with Madonna herself all wrapped up in there, then yeah, I'm gonna say Breathless Mahoney, and I'm gonna say that you would F, well, Warren Beatty. I mean, that was not who I had written down, but now I'm gonna go with Warren Beatty.
Yeah, no, I think that it's kind of rough for Donna, because it's gonna be so easy to pick, because Warren Beatty's the only man in this movie who looks like a human being. Like, everyone else looks like a Halloween mask, unless you're going for Dick Van Dyke, which, I mean, I guess, to each his own. But I'm going to say you're going for the Tess Trueheart that you would be, again, on account of that baseball throwing on that cannon arm. and I would say that, yeah, I'm going to say you F Dick Tracy, and it's not a great, you know.
He's not good, Don, I'm telling you now. Just look at
the guy's trouble. Well, yeah. So I did have a very hard time choosing who to be, because I had huge childhood loyalties to Breathless Mahoney. But I took some time and I thought about actually like what it would be like to be both those two female characters. And I think I don't want to be Breathless at all. I don't want to be her. So I chose Tess Trueheart with the cannon arm. She doesn't scream. She's a totally reasonable
thing. Her vagina doesn't drip.
The kid likes her. She's totally respectable. She's got great hair. She's got great outfits. So I choose Tess Trueheart.
Yes.
Okay.
And Dick Van Dyke is an interesting possibility. You know, he and I are from the same hometown. So it's like a hometown old man kind of a...
That's not a thing. That's never a good reason to sleep with someone.
You know, the old hometown old man.
So, I chose Dick Tracy, Warren Beatty, Dick, and Tess. I'm on board for those two. That's the totally unsurprising choice.
Dick and Tess, got it. Carlos, let's do Carlos.
Do me.
Carlos.
I thought Carlos this is silly, and I know this is wrong. I just couldn't come up with, okay, in terms of, like, who would you want to be? I know this is not what you picked, but from my point of view, I thought to myself, he would be really good as Dick Tracy's partner. I could see Carlos in the car with Dick Tracy being like, oh, you fucking hothead, and oh, you're always bending the rules, Tracy. I'm worried about you. It'd be reasonable, see? Carlos would be a good partner for Dick Tracy. So that's who I said.
Balls Tracy is what I would be called.
So you're what, the kid then?
No. Like, Dick Tracy has a partner in the movie. He just barely registers. The guy he wears all red. I think his name is Sam.
Balls. His name is Balls.
Balls is his name.
It's old Balls. Dick and Balls.
Balls Lucy, I think, is his name.
Oh, jeez.
And then who would you F? I mean, it's slim picking, so obviously, you know, prune face.
Let's not forget that Tess's mother does make an appearance in the film as well.
Oh, I did not forget.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just kidding.
Good.
Please
don't. Oh, I did not forget.
Breathless. Fuck it.
Okay, so I thought that it would be super fun to be a villain in this movie. And I thought that, Carlos, you would have a really fun time with a Tommy gun being a flat top.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
I could see you being like, just like that. And yeah, I don't know, after all the, like, drippy man voice conversations, I think that I have to choose Tess across the board. I don't think anybody wants to F poor Breathless, but maybe you do. Surprise me.
My answers are going to be a surprise and not a surprise. I would be Dick Tracy, because who the hell wants to look like the villains in this movie? Like, I definitely don't want to be Little Face, whatever the hell his last name was.
What if?
But 88 Keys would have been my second choice for who to be.
Oh,
would have been, because he's the only other human being looking person in the movie. And that's a cool name. That's a great rap name, actually.
Yeah.
Right. Were you going to say something, Chris?
I was probably going to say something stupid and vulgar.
Okay. Yeah, I'm totally going for Breathless Mahoney, because I'm a man. Yeah. And
there you go.
And
all her drippy bits.
Well, and drippy, and, but no, I can't even say it. It's so gross. I'm sorry. I can't.
Her cones are drippy. That's for sure.
I'll leave it at here's a G-rated way of what I was thinking. Look, the way she delivers the line, gross. But a well saturated. Forget it. I can't.
Saturated.
That's. It was the wrong word, and I'm bailing. I'm parachuting out of this one, you guys. I'm done.
If I could remember even, like, what one of the other showgirls at the club looked like, I might have picked them, but I cannot.
I mean, they don't have a name. What would you say? The second one from the left.
None of them have names.
Yeah, second showgirl. Like, well, I mean, for Mario Brothers, I might have decided I wanted to F one of the girls in the harem, but they don't have names.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Still say that. One of the girls in the chorus line. That's still a valid.
Let's just assume one of the girls in the chorus line does not have venereal
disease.
With
a totally normal hoo-hoo.
Yeah.
Totally non-drippy.
Totally dry kitty.
So we don't want it totally dry. I don't know
That's sort of what I was saying.
Why are we doing this?
Not such a bad sandpaper.
Okay.
Name.
Okay, I would F 88 keys. Fine. There you go.
88 keys.
Yeah.
88 keys.
My fan fiction. Oh, it's becoming real.
Okay, so 88 keys, you just go over there.
I'm not here playing the side B of that tape.
He's coming.
All right. You made your part.
Good. Okay, it's Chris's turn.
Chris, I'm going to say Chris wants to be 88 Keys.
Everybody wants to be 88 Keys. See, I said...
Alicia's brother, 88.
Well, I thought that... I don't know, I think the villains are so fun. I almost wanted to be a villain because I think they're so cool. So I said Chris would want to be Big Boy. Big Boy Caprice with his climbing well, up on the table to taste the coffee.
The way that he puts together that stage show is exactly how I direct movies, so...
yeah, right? No! We'll do it again!
More!
Yeah, I want to see this movie where Chris is big boy.
All right, so Carlos says I would be 88 keys. Donna, you say big boy.
And I'm going to say you'd F... I'm gonna say you'd F Breathless.
Okay.
I'm gonna say. Well, I did want to say Catherine O'Hara, but you didn't know she was in the movie, so.
especially 1990 era Catherine O'Hara. I know. If I'd known.
Yeah. She had it going on in that one scene that she was in. Her name was Texie Garcia.
Yep. Sure was.
Okay. Texie Garcia.
Spicy?
Yeah, it's a spicy name. But it is.
Oh, Jesus.
All right, so I would be the kid because, as we've established earlier.
You love that kid.
Charlie Korsmo is my surrogate. That was me at 8. But beyond that, no, I mean, just his role in the movie is, dude, he's got no responsibilities. He's got people feeding him delicious diner food.
Chili.
He gets to go along on all these cool police chases, and he gets a badge, and yeah, I'd be the kid. He's the one having the most fun.
Good point.
And then, I don't know, guys, who I would have... I am concerned about her drippy hoo-ha, but breakfast. Or breathless.
You said breakfast.
That is fucking terrible.
That's how deep I am into being the kid. Can I just eat? I'm not feeling that horny. I'll just have some cereal, please.
Oh, gosh.
Your cereal's real milky.
Yeah, I'd have breakfast.
Oh, God.
That's so awful.
Okay, guys, that's it for us. Let us know if you have any suggestions for other titles we should revisit. And until next time, keep your drippy kitties dry.